Saving and everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Vestair Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Vestair products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadda Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Soccer Matters.
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe! Goal!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. As everybody knows, we will have the call of LAFC and the Houston Dynamo this Saturday. Pregame show will kick off at 2 o'clock, and star-studded LAFC will be coming to town, and including one of their players, Corey Baird, who's won a number of national titles at Stanford and has been playing up front for Bob Bradley and LAFC, and he joins us now. Corey, thanks so much for coming on the program.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Listen, just talk to me a little bit about, the move to LAFC and how things maybe are different for you as a professional athlete coming from another club.
Yeah, I think I got pretty accustomed to life in Salt Lake. The move kind of came out of nowhere on my end. But I think when a team of LAFC's caliber wants you, it's an exciting moment, and getting to play with some of the guys on the team here, getting to work under Bob, I think it's all just exciting for me, and I just want to take it in stride and make the most of this opportunity.
When you first heard about it, what are the emotions that go through your head?
It was a big shocker. My girlfriend had just moved in 10 days prior, so we're just kind of hanging stuff up on the wall, not really getting ready for a move, but once I kind of settled in a little bit more thinking about it, I think this is, out of the teams around the league, this is one of the top teams I would have wanted to go to. So I'm excited for it. I'm happy to be here.
And we're not throwing stones here, but the professionalism top to bottom at LAFC, it's got to be something unique.
Yeah, I think they do a great job really integrating everyone and making everyone here feel important and making sure that it's an environment that no matter who you are, you can get better.
Talk to me about Bob Bradley and the type of manager he is and what it's like working under him, because certainly he's a very intense, passionate coach.
Yeah, I think intense is a good way to put it. Even on some days where things can be lighter, he's still expecting your mind to be working and you to be doing the right things and not just taking days off. So up and down the ladder of the team, I'd say like, no one can just take a day off. You got to give it your all every day. And that level in training, I think, translates to the high tempo we want to play in games.
What's the first thing that Bob says to you, Bob Bradley says to you when you get to LA and in your first conversations? I mean, how does he sort of open the door talking to you after acquiring you and kind of letting you know why he wants you here and kind of maybe what his expectations are?
Talk to me a little bit about where I might be playing and just the things he's looking from players in those positions. And as he was telling me that, I felt like a lot of the things that he was looking for guys to do in those spots were things that I would say are strengths of mine. So it was exciting for me that he thought I would fit into that. And I think I do fit into the way the team plays, and it's been fun getting to know the other guys and really start to mesh and develop some chemistry with them.
Is it fun to play in a high pressing tempo system like this with LAFC? And of course, I would think you're a perfect fit for it. I could see why he's bringing you into this system.
Yeah. I'm someone who I think I definitely like playing on the front foot. I think as an attacker, it's not fun to sit in. You want to go out the other team. You want to get the ball back. So I think I'd much rather be doing that than just sitting back, tracking back. I'd rather be on the front foot, taking the game to them.
Talking to attacker Corey Baird of LAFC. They come into Houston this weekend to take on the Houston Dynamo this Saturday afternoon. Corey, how is it different without Diego Rossi and Carlos Vela? Obviously, it's opportunity for others, but how is it different for LAFC?
I don't think it's been too different for us. It's you lack that little bit of if we're not playing great, we know these guys can create something special out of nothing. So might have to work a little harder for your chances. They're not going to come as easy. Maybe they take a lot of focus away from you, and the defense is so worried about them. Spaces might open up a little bit more for yourself. But I think for us, the way we play, it's not we change based on them being in the team or not. It's very much this is what's expected from these positions, and this is what we want you to be doing. So I think it's from my perspective, I'm going out there trying to do the exact same thing, whether they're on the field or not. They just make my job a little easier sometimes.
So when you're in training with Vela and Rossi, and look, you're a professional in your own right. You've earned everything you've done. I've watched your college career. You were at the top of your game in college at Stanford. Are there times when you're watching these guys in training, you pick things up, or you know, you just kind of go, wow, you know, I'm really playing with some pretty elite guys here?
I try and not think too much about the getting into the wow factor. You could say Carlos's career, some of the teams he's played for, and try and really focus on yourself and that you belong there. Not be much of a fan there because they got just kind of set you back. But you do see them do some things in training, and you're just like, well, yeah, that's Carlos. That's what he's going to do. Like, it's incredible. But definitely have picked up on some little things just through talking to them, little things that different ways they see the game, little nuances that they find. Like, oh, if your body position's this way, you're a couple yards that way. So tips and stuff to get you in the ball in a little bit better of a spot.
Yeah, what's a little subtle thing? So my first year in the pros, I learned a little subtle thing, you know, from a veteran center back that just, you know, when you think about it, you go, how could I not have been doing this for this long, right? Is there any little subtle thing that you've picked up in your early years of Major League Soccer that you just kind of make that kind of same comment to yourself about, wow, that's maybe something subtle, but it's something that can make a big difference?
I think Diego does a great job of receiving the ball moving quickly, where that first touch is always a good first touch out in front of him where he can really go at defenders, and with his speed – that touch could be past them. That touch could be under control where now he's moving at speed at a guy so that the dribble now becomes easier. And it doesn't look like anything that impressive, but it sets him up really well to really get at teams and be dangerous.
Corey Baird joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Corey, just how many titles at Stanford now? Just remind me here for a second.
Three national championships and four Pac-12s.
Is that all? Huh? Okay. Three national titles at Stanford, including one here in Houston at BBVA Stadium. So you're going back into the stadium where you won a national title and you had some very fond memories. Apart from the field being not very good that day, I remember that.
It was a little green with some of the spray paint.
So just talk about your time under Jeremy Gunn at Stanford and what that has meant for your pro career, because you know, you made the jump from the college game. You've made it successfully. You were at a program that was very professional under Jeremy. Just speak about that program setting you up and preparing you for MLS.
Yeah, I think it helped a lot with my mentality in the way I looked at the game, and just might not always be pretty, but you got to find a way to win. And the hard work that is required to do that, I think going into it, I may have been a little stubborn, a little bit thinking like, oh, like this is the way I think things should go. And kind of like idealized the way I thought soccer should be, and without the grit on the other side of the ball, some of the hard work that was required. And I think through my time there, I kind of realized, okay, like, it's not always going to be this pretty game. Like, you have to be able to battle. You have to be able to wear your sleeves up when things aren't going your way and find ways to win. And I think it's something we did great there, and it shows with the titles we won. But we weren't always the best team out there, but we found ways to win no matter how we had to do it.
Corey Baer joining us here. I was always amazed at your work ethic, obviously, which is important in the modern game. You've reiterated that a bunch. Did you have that as a youth player? Have you always had that, or was that something that was sort of developed and learned?
I'd like to think I worked hard as a youth player, but I definitely think as I got older, I realized I needed to do a little bit more. And I think as a kid, I may have been, I guess, like, technically gifted, but I kind of I realized prior around like 17, 18, 19 that's not going to get me the whole way. And there's going to be guys that are coming around that are better than me technically, like, better soccer players than I am. But if I also added another facet to my game, it just makes me that much better of a player.
All right, your first game of the year, you played Austin FC. You scored in that game. That had to feel pretty good to get into Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, definitely want to start things out on the right foot, getting a win to start the season. Definitely felt nice for us, and it's just kind of all the hard work we've done throughout preseason, it kind of showed there.
Any thoughts on Houston? Have you seen any of their games yet? Have you dug into any tape yet? Any general thoughts about the Houston Dynamo?
I haven't watched them too much this year. I think I caught like a second half of one of their games earlier. I think we're going over some video tomorrow, so we'll get a better idea of what exactly they're looking to do.
Corey, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you doing this interview, giving us the LAFC perspective, and best of luck in the rest of your career.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Corey Baird. We'll take a break here. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Take a look over.
Yeah, no, when the whistle goes.
Wheel. Fun.
Yeah, no, when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.
I'm Vlad Kendanovsky, the coach of U.S. Women National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, we roll on here on the UEFA Champions League and a CONCACAF Champions League day. Just before we get to our next guest, quick reminder here for Advantage BMW Midtown. I've leased, I've driven Advantage BMW Midtown vehicles. I've bought. They're like no other. You get a BMW, it is the ultimate driving machine. There's no question about it. The other thing I love, though, if you go to Advantage BMW in Midtown, they'll cover you through sales, service, finance, and it can be done so easy. Get in a sedan, a 3, a 5, a 7 series, or I got an X5, drove it 23 hours to New Jersey, threw the dog, the bike in the car. Absolutely incredible. Advantage BMW Midtown, go down there, ask for Steven or Justin, and they help us to bring the next interview. Former Newcastle United defender, you see him on Fox, Warren Barton joining us now. Warren, how are you?
Very well, my friend. Very well. Just been interested looking at that Champions League game, watching the game, and then obviously getting ready for another big one tomorrow. So, yeah, very good. Nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah, you too, Warren. All right, let's just start off. First 30 minutes, I thought Chelsea looked exceptional here, and maybe, I don't know if I like using the word unlucky, but, boy, it sure seemed like a prime time to get a second goal.
Yeah, I think when you start a game that well against a giant like Real Madrid, you have to take your chances. And maybe a word clinical would be something that I would use. They had really good opportunities, Timo Werner in particular. The movement was excellent. Thomas Tuchel's tactics were spot on. The way he used Azpilicueta and Christian Pulisic as well. They was rampant. Every time they looked forward, they looked like it was going to score. But unfortunately, when you're playing against royalty of the Champions League, they find a way to get back into the game. And what a wonderful goal by Benzema as well. And that just shows you what they have, that aura, and they feel a divine right to go to a Champions League final. And that's a culture of the football club and the soccer club. So Chelsea, as I said, when you have that chance and you have a team on the rack, you've really got to, you know, at least get one or two. But I think if you were to say to the Chelsea squad and a manager beforehand, you're going to come away with a 1-1 draw, scoring away from home, which counts as a second goal, they would have took it, but their performance in the first 35, 40 minutes was superb.
Former Newcastle United defender Warren Barton joining us. So let's stay on that first 30 minutes for a second here. And Chelsea, as you mentioned, looked exceptional. Is this a moment here where it took maybe Zinedine Zidane a little while to get this figured out? Because they looked in between trying to press and then maybe drop off. They looked like they had a hard time kind of just figuring out Chelsea at that moment, that first 30 minutes.
Yeah, and Chelsea was very composed on the ball. Janino in midfield, number five, he was always available and find the simple pass, whether it was Mason Mount, whether it was Christian Pulisic, and them little girls, and N'Golo Kante was sensational. And it just took, you know, you've got to remember as well that midfield three of Casemiro, Modric and Cruz have been together a long time, but they are, apart from maybe Casemiro, a little bit older in their legs. So maybe that initial movement and passing just caught them unaware. But once they tightened that up a little bit and Marcelo started to tuck in across and try and occupy Christensen and Aspilicueta, it relieved a little bit more pressure on that left-hand side. So again, Zidane is, you know, Glenn, we've been in this business a long, long time. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. I think we bang the drum so much about Pep Guardiola, and rightly so, and Jurgen Klopp. But they haven't done what he's done to win three continuously and to go back to Real Madrid and win a title when they was really drifting along and take this team with Hazard that looks half the player he was when he was at Chelsea and again be, you know, virtually top of the league, getting into another final. He's a wonderful coach. I had the pleasure of being with him. I played against him when he was in Los Angeles with Real Madrid. And, you know, it's quite amusing, really. I was with a friend of a friend and he was talking about Pep reinventing the game and Klopp with his heavy metal. He said, "I just like winning trophies." That was it. That was it. And it was about winning games and winning trophies and finding out about, you know, like you've said there, just adjusting a little bit. I wouldn't say on the fly, but his soccer IQ is so high that he just knows that he can change a game within a game. And that's what he did in this game. And Chelsea in the second half was nullified. And maybe a little bit of their mindset was, well, we've got to go away from home. Let's just see this game out. But for me, Zidane is brilliant because he just, whatever game he's in, he finds a way normally. And I know people are going to say not always, but normally, he does understand how to win trophies and win games. And that's not a bad habit to have.
Let's talk about Christian Pulisic. Scored a wonderful goal. Seemed to get a lot of the ball in behind that wonderful Real Madrid midfield that you just mentioned. Really had some spectacular moments in the first half where, man, he just seemed like maybe one pass away from it or just waited a pass just that little bit too far, but still produced the road goal.
Yeah, I mean, he's a player. Me and Eric Ronaldo, when we was at Fox together and see Christian playing the Champions League again for Dortmund against Real Madrid, and he had a sensational 25 minutes. And that was really the benchmark for him. And we've seen a lot of games where he's played that well. And the injuries that he's had and the pace of the game in the Premier League has caught Christian out a little bit. And also the competitive nature of the squad and rotating is something that you have to be mindful of in the Premier League. It is cutthroat. But there's no doubt he's a talented player. He's not potential. He's a player. You know, I think we get thrown around and I heard a couple of the commentators say he's got good potential. He's a top-class player. And now he needs to be more consistent and obviously be away from injuries because, you know, you don't play at the level that he's played at and consistently to understand. But he had a good, you know, soccer brain today. When he was finding the ball, he was always on the turn and doing what he does best, running at people. The first thing he did was positive. He turned, he went at people. A couple of times, maybe a lack of movement from Werner or a heavy weight of pass was a bit too much for Christian. But the little Dutch header for the goal, for the chance for Werner was excellent. His movement was good. You know, he's putting in tackles against Marcelo and playing and running away from Marcelo. So, you know, there's no doubt about what Christian can do. And he's going to be now a regular Champions League player. And that's great credit to him and his attitude and his potential and his ability now. So he's put all that together in recent years. And this has been a challenging time for him as well, but he'd grow from this. And he looks now when he comes on that he's got a point to prove. And you need to do that when you want to be a big time player. Every time you play, it must be an important game. Where I think in the past, it's maybe I'm still learning. Now he's old enough now to realize that the spotlight's there, and he should thrive in that element because he's, as I said, a very, very good player.
I think he's fought through a lot of these challenges, whether it's with a coach, whether it's injuries. I think he's fought through some of these challenges wonderfully. Do you think he gets a little bit of an unfair shake? You know, it's always the American, right? Because he's an American, does he get a little bit of an unfair shake? I don't look at him as an American. I just look at him playing the game as good as anybody else out there.
Yeah, no, I think, Glenn, we do. I think we look at him as a player getting a bit of unfair criticism because we feel he's a good player, but that's the nature. And if he has a bad game, because of his levels being so high, us in the business and maybe a played, we want him to be that high all the time. I think it's the American media that, you know, straight away, oh, it's an American goal and Lexi, oh, the Americans. That's gone, really. That you shouldn't be banging the drum. He's a regular Premier League player and a regular Champions League player. I think that's in the past when we maybe see other players doing that and getting to a Champions League. For me now, you've got to break that mindset and say you expect him to play. You expect him to be in Champions League. You expect him to be a regular, not, hey, let's wave the flags, the Americans scored a goal. I think them days have gone. You've got so many good young players now, you know, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, that are playing regular at a high level, demanding respect. And, you know, people like Brad Friedel and Eric and John Harkes were going way, way back, and Clint Dempsey. You know, maybe then it was a little bit the Americans, but them guys went out there and made everybody respect players, American players, because they're the ones pioneers, that went out there.
Pioneers, for sure.
Yeah, they was definitely pioneers to go forward. And then this conveyor belt of young, talented players that we have. So I it amuses me a little bit when I see it. Even on my own network is like, we've got to say about Christian, he's American, he's doing this. Expect him to do it. Don't you know, be happy and put a carnival out that he's played in a game. He's a top-class player, so he should be playing. And that's when the scrutiny comes, when he has an indifferent game. And like you said, some people think it's unfairly, but that's the nature and that's how we judge him now. Of being a top-class player. He's not a young 15, 16, 17-year-old boy anymore. He's a man, and he's proved that, and he'll want it. I think if you ever speak to him about what he wants to have that mark on his back. He wants to say, yeah, I'm a top player, and I'm going to get judged week in, week out, because that's what makes you better. That's what made me play 450 games in the top league, is that you want to be challenged, and he's no doubt he's able to do that.
No question. How about some quick thoughts before we move on, just about the opening 2 weekends of Major League Soccer. Certainly it was exciting. It's good to see people back in stadiums, all that. But from what you saw on the field?
I thought the level of games was good. I thought the quality, considering some of these teams have not had so many preseason. You said about, you know, Houston, and I was listening to your game that you commentated on, and, you know, teams that have, you know, only played USL teams, not being able to come across and play high level teams. So I think the level of games was good. The goals was sensational, and it's always good for one of your superstars, you know, Chicharito, to start scoring goals. And I think that's important for him. I think it's important for the league. And as I said, it's great that, if you like, a Galaxy are unbeaten. You know, Minnesota have had a bit of a wake-up call. They've gone out and splashed the bucks again. You know, my friend Adrian Heath has gone out there as well. So I think all being around, Glenn, it was a real encouraging time, because, you know, the way the season ended, and now it's all the expectation and the hype, but the goals was good. The entertaining was good. There were so many good games, and not too many clean sheets. So that's always a positive. So I think it was a really encouraging start to the season, and hopefully it continues.
All right. As someone who played in the Premier League, Newcastle United in soccer-crazed Northern England, okay, your take on the Super League and the response from the supporters and what they did in maybe being the gatekeepers of the English game to a degree?
Yeah, I think it was pure arrogance, pure greed, and particularly self-centered, when you're thinking that people are going through a hard time in the pandemic, to think you can go and have a private meeting, and in this climate, expect people just accept it. I think it was a huge wake-up call for the owners. I don't think they did it, and this may sound hypocritical, but in a way of being disrespectful. I think the owners that you're speaking about there, particularly, you know, not really from the UK or in that market, that they didn't quite understand. Well, all they're trying to do is look after their club, earn more money, challenge at the highest level. So they're businessmen. So they're trying to help their business. Little did they know about the heritage and history and tradition of English football, is that, you know, that's something that they're not going to tolerate. And when you see, I mean, we've had the problems, Newcastle, with our owner running it as a business, not really putting the money in. It's frustrated the fans no end. And now you've seen the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Manchester United and Liverpool feel exactly the same. I really felt for the coaches. I felt for the players because they was took by surprise. But the backlash that come from that has been overwhelming. And obviously it was changed around in 72 hours, you know, and even the others now, Barcelona, AC Milan, they've all had a bit of humble pie. So, you know, I put it on social media, football won, soccer won. It wasn't now about the business. And we've been in the business long enough, Glenn, that we've noticed calling games, how hard it is without the fans there. Without our job, it motivates us. It motivates the players. It makes coaches make different decisions with player fans getting involved. And to think that you can just take that away just purely for money. But, you know, I want to stay in this league. But when I go away for 5 or 6 weeks, I'm going to go and earn nearly $500 million, and you can't do anything about it. I think it was pure arrogance. And as I said, it's great that it's been put to the side. Do I think it's dead and buried? No, I think it'll pop its ugly head up.
They're
maybe
gonna,
an 18.
They're going to storm the castle again because they're looking at NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball, who makes more money than European soccer, and they're going, we want a piece of that action. So
it is about
really
money.
Interesting to see what happens in the future.
Yeah, yeah. I wish me and you got a piece of the pie, my friend, eh?
No, you and me for the love of the game.
Exactly.
That was the nice little spike from that whole thing.
Exactly.
And I think for me, when it comes to Manchester United, and I'll just use them as one instance, when their fans know, and they know it clearly, that 1.8, you know, billion has been taken out in profits back to the Glazer family and not reinvested in the club, I think it was a backlash against that as well. You know, because these fans are educated, they're on top of it. And, you know, the Glazers may not know who Duncan Edwards is, but the fans know if they're reinvesting in the history and the tradition of the club.
I don't know. I don't think they know who Paul Popper is, do they?
Probably.
I know Tom Brady. That's about it.
That's all right. In Newcastle, I know who Warren Barton is. Warren, thank you as always for coming on. Great to see you and great to hear from you. And thanks for all the insight tonight.
Absolute pleasure, my friend. Take care. Thank you.
All right, the one and only Warren Barton. He's been on the show many times. We appreciate him coming on. Former Newcastle United defender. You'll catch him on Fox as an analyst on various leagues. All right, we'll take a break here. We have more to come. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They are getting soccer. All you have to do is call them at 713-780-3776, and we will continue on. We'll take a break.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Tyler Adams, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, as always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. A big thank you to John and his firm, by the way. John's getting soccer on the radio both here in Houston and in Austin, Texas, so we thank him a lot for that. We're going to finish up strong here tonight. Austin FC, a historic 3-1 victory. It comes over the Colorado Rapids at altitude. They score their first ever historic goal. And the man who did it, he is here. He is Diego Fagundes. Diego, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me.
Well, obviously I got to ask the obvious first question. And that is just, you know, the significance of that goal, not only for Austin FC and the fans, but, you know, for that to be you in your career. I mean, this is an amazing moment to score the first ever goal for Austin FC.
It definitely was. I think in my career, I can put this moment up there. Since I joined the league, and I said it in a couple of my tweets and a couple of my Instagram posts, when I first joined this league, I said to myself, make sure your name is known and make an impact. I thought I did that in New England right away. And then, of course, I come here to Austin, and what a beautiful moment to put my name out there and make it in a historic way to score the first goal for the fans, for the team, for the city, it's an amazing feeling. And it's something that now no one can take that away from me. And I can keep that in my, one of my best memories that I have in my career.
Let's talk a little bit about what I thought was amazing. So I've covered this league, obviously, since you've been in it, since its beginning. And I'm not sure I've ever seen a team in Colorado with a lead finish a game out that aggressively. It almost was like you guys became stronger as the game went on at altitude.
To be honest, when you think about altitude, you think that the home team would have the advantage. But the way we've been working here in Austin with the equipment that we have in our facility, the training trainers that we have, the coaching staff, the players, we knew that it was going to be a tough game. But all this work that we put in the off season and in season, we knew it was going to pay off. And I think you saw it. Our numbers showed when we saw the database, we had three midfielders that are running 11K in the game. That's you don't really see that a lot. And that's just amazing to see. And like you said, we finished this game so strong where at the beginning, sure, we died down a little bit. We were struggling the first 20 minutes. But then the game opened up for us, and it was like we just hit second gear, and there was no stopping us. And that's what we like to see. And if we can play in altitude that good, then we can play anywhere. Let's be honest. With the squad that we have, the players we have, and all the facility, the recovery and everything, there's no way we should be struggling.
For me, in game two, it's pretty remarkable how things have come together here. And obviously, you know, you listen to Josh Wolf. He's been on the show. You listen to his quotes. You listen to his press conferences. You develop a theme in some of the things he's saying. Did you expect it to come together this quickly in game two? Because that second half just really seemed to platform you.
It's funny that you say that, because we all, every single player came from somewhere else. We're not a team that we came, that we left 11 players and then we only brought a couple pieces. This is a whole brand new team. But the way we're playing, it seems like we've already had that chemistry from before. And it has to do from off season. But the optional off season, we had 20 something guys in here training for optional training. That's a huge part. We were doing activities out of soccer so then we could bond, we could stick together, know each other. And I think it's showing in the games, in training. The chemistry is there, and I'm actually very happy to be a part of this family. It's a team and everything, but it's more of a family. The way we're working for each other, the way we talk to each other and motivate each other, we want to win. And I think from the players to the staff to the fans, to the owners, to everybody, we all want to win. We want to show that this is how good we are. And I think we've been showing that. First game in LA, I thought we went out there against a tough rival. We were unlucky to not get a goal or points there. But then we go to Colorado, like you said, in altitude, and our team performed. And the best part is being able to win in front of fans. We had over 200-something fans out there. And I said it once, and I'll say it again. It didn't feel like an away game. It felt more of a home game than anything. So I'm actually looking forward to when we play here at Q2 Stadium. It's going to be an atmosphere that everybody's going to want to come here.
He's Diego Fagundes. Diego, it looks at this juncture in your career. I mean, you look as lively, as aggressive, as light on your feet as ever.
It's tough because the reason I feel this way, it's the people that we have here, they want me to be better. I've got some stuff taken away from me while I was in New England. They never allowed me to break the record for most appearances, and that's fine. I'm hungry. I came here to show who I am. The last 2 years is not who I was. I wasn't playing in the right position. I wasn't the player that I wanted to be, but now I'm here in Austin. They know what I'm capable of. And like I said, you take one record away, but I can break another one here. I was able to put my name in my foot on this team in the city. And I want people to know that this is not the end of it. This is just the beginning for me. There's still a lot for me to learn. There's a lot for me to show, and I'm here to do that.
Diego Fagundes joining us. Diego, do you feel blessed that you got the second opportunity? Cause not every player gets that.
To be honest, I do. And I said it yesterday, I'm one lucky guy, because anybody could have scored that goal for us. Anybody could have scored in LA. Maybe someone is helping me out. They said to me, you know what? You weren't able to do something for a team that you were there for 10 years. So let me put this on you so then no one can take that away from me. And maybe that's what it was. And trust me, I feel lucky. I feel blessed, because seeing all these fans crying because of that one goal is unbelievable. I don't even know how to like express it. They're thanking me, but at the end of the day, I thank my team and I thank them, because without my team and without them, I wouldn't be here. So I'm very blessed. And like I said, this is just the beginning for me. Hopefully there's a lot more goals and a lot more celebrations that we can do. I think now we're all looking forward to the next game on Saturday against Minnesota, and it's going to be a tough one. And I think we're all ready for it.
I want to ask you this, because this is one thing I was really excited to ask you about. Look, when young players break on the scene like yourself, that are talented, I think we have the tendency sometimes to blow them up so quickly, it could be negative in a way. I remember calling your games and going, man, this poor guy, can he ever be not the child prodigy, you know, the young teenage, you know, at what point are we going to stop calling him that, right? Or are we going to stop calling him the homegrown and all? Was that a burden? Was that a little bit heavy to carry in New England?
To be honest, it's not something that I really look into it. When I'm on the field, I just want to be happy. One thing my dad always said to me, make sure you play with a smile on your face, because when you're playing, that's when you're the happiest. I was one lucky guy to be a professional soccer player. Not everybody gets that opportunity. And one thing I always tell people is, when you have that ability to have that chance, make sure you go for it. Don't let anyone say no to you. Don't let anyone stop you. When I first signed professionally, people told me I was small, that I was that I wasn't strong. But I think if I look at my career, 11 years of my career, 54 goals, 46 assists, I think that's a pretty good career. And I'm only 26, so hopefully I can play for another 9, 10 years. I think my next goal that I have in my mind is trying to get the 4 or 5 assists that I need so I can be the youngest player to 50-50. I have that in my mind, but at the same time, I'm just trying to play the game. It's like Josh says, we want to play good soccer here in Austin, and with the players that we have, we can do that. At the end of the day, what's important is winning games.
That you did in Colorado. There's no question about that. That was a second half to write home about. 3 goals in about 10 or 11 minutes. You were part of the pressing play, obviously suits your style as well. All right, so just tell me a little bit about the AstroTurf, because all those years, and I know you and I talked briefly before we started this interview of playing on artificial surface, it must be appealing to you simply to be playing on grass at home in Austin.
It is, because I think players who play on turf, it takes away years of their career. As even if you don't realize it, you don't think about it. Me starting at 15, playing on AstroTurf and playing 10 years on it, it definitely probably took 1 or 2 years. But this is when I need to now be better, go to the gym more, eat healthy, prepare myself so then my body can play another 10 years. I want to play till I'm 35, 36 years old. And that's what I want to do. But playing on turf for that long probably took a couple of years. And I've been talking to the coaching staff, to the trainers here, and they're doing everything in their powers to make sure that my knees are good, my hips are good, my ankles. And like I said, with the equipment that we have here, I should be able to play another 10 years in my career. And like I said, no one likes playing on turf. Let's be honest. There's not one player on this league that likes playing on turf. But when you have a home team that has that turf, it's a huge advantage. So you just need to take that with you. And then when teams and players come to you, you just have to make sure you're winning those games. I am lucky now that I'm on grass and I can train and the nice weather. I don't have to worry about the cold weather or anything like that. So it's nice. I'm starting to like Austin more and more, but each day. And it's just, like I said, the fans here make it even more special.
We didn't get Diego on last night, but we got him on tonight. So we wanted to deliver for you. And we appreciate Diego Fagundes joining us. First goal scorer in the history of Austin FC. 26 years old, you're a father also. I mean, what does fatherhood and being married and being a family guy mean to you? And how does that put maybe your life as a professional athlete in context?
It's huge. I became a father kind of young. I have a 3-year-old and an 18-month-old baby. So it's an amazing feeling. I have something else to play for, not just myself, not just for my family, but my kids. That's why after the celebration, I kissed my wrist. Because I have my kids' names right there. At the end of the day, I'm in this career and I'm doing everything I can to be a better person, a better father, a better player for them. They're the ones who give me the energy to go out there and play, perform, show how happy I am. and it's something special. I remember after the game, after I scored, my daughter sends me a message at like 12 o'clock at night congratulating me, and that was something special for me. And I love to see that. They love going to the games and yelling, "Go, Diego, go." And it's funny that my daughter doesn't call me daddy or dada, or she calls me Diego, because everybody at Gillette used to call me Diego. And it's as much as I want her to call me daddy, I know she appreciates what I do for a living and what I do every day for them.
All right. As I sit here and talk to you after scoring the first ever goal, thinking you're not going to be content if you don't start against Minnesota United.
To be honest, whatever happens against Minnesota, it happens. I can only dictate who's on the field, and that's going to be up to the coaching staff to decide if I'm going to be on the field or not. I just have to be prepared. Like I said, anything could happen. In Colorado, I didn't know I was starting to before warmups, and mentally you have to be prepared. Every player has to be prepared. We don't know when we're going to get our chance and when we're not. And I had so much going on in that week in my head, and stuff that people don't even realize, but something so special happened to me that now I need to get that positive energy and just keep moving forward at the end of the day. I can't control who they put out there on the field. All I can control is when I step on the field, I want to give it 110%, do everything possible to win the games, and give the fans and my teammates everything I have.
Diego, it's uplifting to hear how motivated and excited you are. What a historic moment. By the way, you did a lot more than that goal in that game, including being involved in the press leading to Cecilio's goal and a lot of other things that we could talk about. But the goal is going to stick out in everybody's mind. Nobody can ever take that away from you. What a moment it was. Thank you so much for coming on tonight, and we wish you the best of luck against Minnesota.
Hey, I appreciate it. And I'm going to keep moving forward, keep being positive, and hopefully you guys see a lot more goals from me this year.
All right, that's Diego Fagundes. What a way to wrap up a great show here tonight. Reminder, Soccer Matters podcast, you can get it at both hornfm.com in Austin, and you can get it here in Houston at espn975.com. For Aaron Raybould and everybody who tuned in here tonight, thank you very much. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everybody.
ESPN 97.5.